Well, next hour, we'll talk about possessed children, but this hour, we'll take your calls and continue chatting with George Ure about some trends. So stand by for that. And welcome back to Coast. We're back with George Ure as we talk about predictions. And George, we're talking about social networking, which is booming right now.
Yeah, it is. But I'm of the opinion that at some point, there will come something of a break in the growth of social media. And the reason...
Maybe a saturation?
Well, it'll be more than saturation. I wrote a column on this morning, as a matter of fact, on urbansurvival.com. And what I pointed out was we had... I was a news director in...
Seattle, right?
1970s, yeah. Yeah, KOL and KMPS up there.
I heard about you when I was in television.
Uh-oh.
No, I did. You were an up-and-comer.
Yeah, we did things like invent the AP radio network on the back of a cocktail napkin. I mean, yeah, we did some really innovative things. But one of the things news directors in Seattle did in the early 1970s was we used to get bomb threat calls all the time. And finally, we all got together and came to a gentleman's agreement. We're not going to do bomb threat stories because it's just a way to disrupt business.
That's
by
right.
People, you know, who are...
We took the same position.
Good.
In Detroit.
In Detroit, yep. CKLW was there.
Well, CK was there. We're on the air on CKLW now. I'll tell you a funny story later on about that.
Oh, cool. Yeah. Anyway, so social media is a little bit like a bomb threat. All you need is a Twitter account and a hashtag or a Facebook account, and you can make some outrageous claims. And the media will often run with the outrageous claim without bothering to vet the source.
Right.
And that is the danger of social media.
They are not what we used to be, George. When we would check out stories, we verified before we went with it.
Of course, we had to.
Now, the minute it's on Twitter or Facebook, it's on the air.
It's on the air is right. There was a story that I used as the example this morning. Trying to remember what it was. It was something to the effect that CBS was slammed for a lack of diversity. And the hashtag was CBS So White. Now, that led to CBS having to come out and say, wait a minute, we're doing more for diversity than anybody else, and here is our programming, and here's our list of stars and content,
mm-hmm.
and all of this. The problem is, we have no idea when we go back to that original story about CBS being, quote, slammed. We have no idea who owns this hashtag.
Who put it out.
Who put it out, what the motivation was, and so forth. So that's one problem that I see ahead trend-wise for social media.
But it is getting bigger.
Oh, it's getting bigger, but it doesn't mean it's getting better.
No, that's true. But do people believe bigger or better?
At the moment, people seem to believe anything on social. I mean, my wife and I have been traveling, and we'll be in a restaurant. We'll see a couple come in. We'll be sitting there chatting among ourselves. We'll look over at this couple that's come in at an adjoining table, and they'll be sitting there with two phones.
Not even looking at each other.
Not even looking at each other. It's like, why are you people even in a restaurant? Go to a drive-thru. Save your money. You know, it's crazy. The other thing about social media that really galls me is it has been a bait-and-switch kind of a business model. And let me explain. When social media was brand new, corporations, websites like mine, all were told, set up a social media account so people can like you and people can follow you, right? Everything went fine. Social media really got ramped up, going like crazy. And then what happens? All of a sudden, social media decides, okay, we got everybody corralled. Now we're going to rent you back the audience you brought to us. And so, for example, let's say I do a post on a certain social media. I can boost my post, that is, send it out to all of my followers for X number of dollars. Wait a minute. They're my customers. They're my followers. Why do I have to pay a third party to get access to my own people? Huh. Well, that's how social media works. Essentially, what ends up happening is social media effectively, in my view, has stolen the loyal customers from businesses and websites and is exploiting it for their profit,
sure,
not that of the
well,
website.
And it also has revolutionized the news business. I'll tell you, when Michael Jackson died almost 7 years ago,
yep,
2009, the world knew about it, George, in minutes.
Yes.
In minutes. It's not like the old days when, you know, Kennedy got killed in 1963. I was 13. You know, radio broke the story. Cronkite had the story. You know, you had to wait for that.
Yeah.
You know, people would get your newspapers. You would read. You know, I've got Dan Rather on tomorrow night. And I've got to tell you, the evening news that you and I grew up to, when you were the news director in Seattle, I was a news director in Minneapolis, when we were running newscasts then, that was the news. You know, people actually went home and watched it because that was the timely news. Now, by the time the evening news is on the three major networks, it's old news.
There's very little breaking news that happens on the networks in scheduled evening newscasts. The problem, George, is again consumer super saturation. And that's one of the things that will have to blow up when we get into the second depression, because we've got too much ad space, too much availability. We're having to make up social. We're having to follow. When we were young guys in the news business, was a Hollywood star becoming a fighter against ISIS really a news story? No.
No.
No. That was just some publicist tap. And nowadays, it's not. There is no filtering of RSS to speak of. If you can get an RSS feed out there, you conform to the Google News.
Well, nowadays, the hot news, George, is some rock star who punches somebody out at a concert.
Yeah, and who's going to divide up the Prince estate? But I'm not on that list, so why am I spending time? You know, this is I'm writing a piece for subscribers on the Peopleomic side this weekend. It's really doable to make $1 million if you'll work 2 hours a week on the stock market. That's it, 2 hours a week. But the amazing thing to me is my kids and everybody else's kids I know, no one understands that becoming rich is a 30-year process. And you have to work at it consistently,
that's
2 hours a week for 30 years, and put into the stock market as your nest egg about what you'd pay for a new car.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you do that, mm-hmm, and then grow your nest egg. But people would rather click away their life in this useless stuff. You know, I refer to myself as a binary person. I got two modes. I'm either making a lot of money or I'm spending money as effectively as I can at having fun. And those are the only two things I'm really interested in. I got a great wife. We enjoy lots of travel, lots of activities, and yet we live apart from the world, so we don't have to put up with a rat race, right? But we're either working or we're playing. And we're working hard or we're playing hard. Real simple.
Let's go to the phones. Plus, Skype is open at George97313. Our guest is George Ure. We're talking about trends. You've heard it. You react to it. William, truck driving in Michigan. Go ahead, William.
Hey, good morning, George and George.
Morning.
I would like to ask you guys to get on the main topic of the true measure of the economy, which is the GDP, which under this current administration is the worst it's ever been since records have been kept. And the stock market's fine and dandy, but that's window dressing for the economy. That's not the measure of the economy. We had 0.5% growth this last quarter, which borderlines on a recession. Also, one more note, the true unemployment is ridiculous. When they say 200,000 jobs have been added, well, maybe 1,000 or 2,000 of those are full-time. All the rest of them are part-time. Our economy right now is being held together by life support. And I wish your guests would address that.
All right. More, you know, and they and also they don't include those who have given up looking for work.
And those who aren't getting benefits. And yes, yes. The no question about it. I will not defend this economy. I call it the economic fairy tale every time the reports come out. Donald Trump has articulated that very well. We've got 94 million people who could be working in this country. The real story behind all of this is it's a natural consequence of exporting our manufacturing core. We are still faced with basically the remnants of the Rust Belt. Yes, there are a few outfits like Quicken that have, you know, helped to save Detroit, but the auto industry is not what it was. We have most of our critical products. I don't think you can buy a refrigerator or a microwave made in America anymore. That stuff is all coming in from Asia. And while it's great for Warren Buffett and the shareholders who, you know, happen to own pieces of Burlington Northern and cargo handlers, great. I look at the port cargo coming through. It's up a little bit. It doesn't mean that there is an equitable distribution of wealth in America. The 1% are continuing to get rich. The taxes they pay could be considerably higher, and there could be better tax benefits, especially for things like health care, for the rest of us. I'm not very happy about it, but, you know, I'm one guy. I just report what I can.
Gordon's in Lakeland, Florida. Welcome to the program. Gordon, go ahead.
Thanks for taking my call, George.
Sure thing.
Hey, George. Earlier in the first hour, you said that the Obama administration could take credit for some positives in the stock market. But my question to you is, number one, how can they take credit when you have Republicans in the House and the Senate who effectively run the show, and anyone could easily make the case? And secondly, both Republicans and Democrats continue to print money and continue to pour money into the loans for higher education, and that's a bubble that's going to burst and take us down. And since both parties are very irresponsible, my second question is, how can we survive, or will we?
Oh, boy. Well, first, I have written many, many times that we only have one political party in America. That is the corporate party. It is the lobbyists who run the show. They promise the votes. They pass around the insider info. It's all one great big happy club. Point one. Point two, I have referred many times to Paul Ryan as the Obama wing of the GOP because of his stand on TPP, because of TPA, because of failure to challenge on budget. It's a rubber stamp. That was not what Republicans were elected by the base to go do. Now, is it going to change if Trump comes along? Maybe, but not too much. There is inertia within any system, no matter how much Trump may wish to change things. He is up against a Congress. He can roll back a lot of executive orders, but by the time they get rolled back, we could be in a tremendous mess. And yes, on top of pensions, on top of new inventions, on top of lack of new markets, new product, including having no manufacturing based student loans, is a problem, but it's just another one in that long list. And when we get to where the can has been kicked down the road in 2017, 2018, that's why I live out in the woods in a self-supporting kind of a world.
Well, I've got to ask you, though, George, if you think change is good right about now.
That's a difficult one.
I know. That's why I asked you.
Yes, I think change is good. Yes, I think change can be positive. Do I have high confidence that it will occur and be positive? If I did, I would probably be living in a big city again where I could take advantage of a lot of nice, faster internet and all the rest of it. The problem is that historically, when the currency has been hollowed out to the point where it has 4.2 cents of purchasing power compared to the dollar of purchasing power it had in 1913, when a steak dinner then cost a buck and it's 25 now, when I look at all of the other problems, the overbuilding of so many things. I mean, we're at saturation on, you mentioned social media, but how many channels of television really can do we need? How many make economic sense? How many banks are we going to have to save? How many auto companies? How many insurance companies? And when the European Union comes to us, as I expect they will have to at some point, and want America to bail out the too big to fail institutions that are systemically critical in Europe, which could then cascade to bring the whole world down, will the American taxpayer want to bend over for that? I don't think so. But that's the problem we have going forward. People who are not prepping are not seeing the big picture. Prepping to me is not just having food. Prepping is having friends in a rural area where you can be self-sufficient. Friends are having, you know, a family like ours, where our family has a fallback to where we are, where we can all work together as a community. That community stuff is terribly important, and it's what's missing. There's a few places where community works in the big city, but by and large, people in the big city are in their electronic cocoons, and they're going to have problems when all of this hits the street.
We've got Bill in Cordova, Tennessee. Let's get you in before the break. Bill, go ahead.
Well, thank you so much. First time caller. Two observations as it relates to Trump perhaps being the president-elect. As a person, just sitting here, an average person, the president, when he puts his hand on that Bible, says that he's going to defend the Constitution from enemies both foreign and domestic. This is what the American people want. Now, the American people wants the president to do the only job that he's elected to do, and that is to defend this Constitution, to defend the homeland. His job isn't to manipulate the stock market. His job isn't to create jobs. The president's job is to defend this great country of ours.
Yes, sir.
Amen. I'll vote for you. Please run.
Minute to go here, George, before the break, and I want to really get your thoughts then on just what he just said.
I believe that the executive orders have drifted far too much away from the intent of the laws that they pretend to implement.
They've almost become demagogic.
Yeah, pretty much.
UrbanSurvival.com, of course, people can go to that website to pick up all your regular bits of information. How often do you post there?
Monday, Tuesday, Thursday, Friday, and PeopleNomics.com, which is where I get into the stock market charts and trend channels and all that. That's on Wednesdays and Saturdays.
Okay, George, stay with us. We're going to come back in a moment and take final phone calls with you here on Coast to Coast AM as we just talk about things that are happening all over this country. George, you're our special guest, great predictor. He was right on the money when he made his predictions in January about where we are today. And welcome back to Coast. George, you're with us, of course. George, you know, you've got your own plane, but I fly a lot, and I can only imagine what these poor people on this Egypt Air flight went through.
Oh, the moment
whatever happened on that plane happened. Because you're still alive for a while, aren't you?
Well, yeah. I used to be senior vice president of a regional airline down in the Caribbean that flew jets around the Cayman Islands. This was years ago, but I spent a couple of years in that. And I always worried about altimeter bombs. That was something that was relatively new technology back at that time.
Right.
And it doesn't take very much to get a small device onto an aircraft. It's so easy to disguise it. And unfortunately, as good a job as TSA does, it's only a matter of time till it happens again, because we are at war, and the war is not being fought in conventional terms.
It's almost going to be to the point where you're not allowed to take anything on a plane.
Yeah,
you know what? Ship it. You're going to have to ship it. If I want to go back to St. Louis, I don't bring a suitcase. I UPS it to St. Louis. I get on the plane, just me.
It's the only way to travel. Or take a car, or what we do, we visit with our granddaughter almost every weekend on Skype. And so, you know, electronics are changing the way people communicate. And it's good on the one hand because it will save some planetary resource, but on the other hand, the industries that have traditionally depended on travel, Boeing, the hotel companies, the car rental companies sell a bunch of cars for Detroit. And so, it's that kind of problem. Again, you know, when I look forward to the 2017-2018, it doesn't really matter which problem begins the spiral down. We have kicked the can down the road, and we can see where the can has landed, and we're going to go there, and then things are going to be ugly. And then you're going to need to figure out food. You're going to need to figure out where to live, where you've got friends, how to connect with people who will have your back. And those are things that we're not developing. There's a very interesting social media article that came out.
See, social media.
Social media article, yeah. It was a 2009 study, and basically it said people who have more than 100 or two friends on social media don't really have any friends. They're just headhunting friends.
Collecting,
but they don't really know
it. It's a numbers game.
Exactly. And, you know, I see that a lot. People are more interested in traffic rather than quality on the internet because they're looking, again, let's monetize everything because that's what we do. America is an amazing country. We can build our way through any problem. But the one thing we haven't figured out how to do is unwind from overcapacity gracefully. It usually happens in a recession of 3/4 or more in declining gross domestic product. And yeah, we can argue that number all day long. But when it gets really serious, it isn't just 3/4. It's an event like the Great Depression, where we had a country full of hungry people for 10 years. And the only reason we got out of it was war, unfortunately, allowed us to produce our way out of the Depression. There was even worry of a second Depression at the end of World War II because we had so much excess capacity. As luck would have it, the war surplus industry was huge, and we had the follow-on war in Korea, which has never ended.
All right, back to the phones we go. Robert in Panama City, Florida. Hello, Robert. Welcome to the show.
Hi, George and George. I just wanted to say thank you very much for giving me airtime. It's an honor to be talking to you.
Sure thing.
You do great work.
You're very
anyway,
welcome.
Thank you. I'm about 30 years old, and I wanted to share my experiences with it.
Okay.
Today is a very data-centric world, and if you don't have critical thinking skills to be able to sort through the amount of data that's out there, then you're going to be lost, first of all. And your guest mentioned spending about 2 hours a week on monetary wealth. But what I would suggest to people, and I hope that this information goes out there and plants a seed, is that take some time to organize and take a good look at the data that's out there on social media, on Facebook. I'm a member of like 1,000 different groups, anything of interest to me, and I sort through it because eventually you'll hit that RSS feed or that group that's just gold, and then it branches out into more information, and suddenly you have a quality of life that you couldn't have gotten 10 years ago by reading the New York Times or the Wall Street Journal or some mainstream publication. The news is out there, and it's better than ever, but you have to look for it. And you really have to devote some time and energy to it.
Can I make a suggestion?
Yeah, sure thing. Go ahead.
On our subscriber side, I did an article some time back on how to build a home information platform, basically an intelligence tool. And the way you can do it very simply is you take the major systems that support your life. There are 7 of them: food, shelter, communications, energy, transportation, environment, and finance. You go into Google News and you set up alerts for keywords. Anytime the word housing pops, I get an email. Anytime communications pops, I get an email. And then when it comes into Outlook, it all sorts into your bit buckets that you've set up. So if I want to know what's going on in housing, I hit my housing file, and there is the summary of all the RSS that is passed down through Google News. And that is a very, very efficient, useful way to sort through the mountain of data.
Well, and you have to admit, too, George, that technology does have its incredible place in society.
Oh, no question. No question about it. I'm a technology geek. But the problem is schools are trying to get people to question their gender rather than question their news environment or question their inputs. And again, another example of a non-issue that has been escalated into the public's interest center on social media. But is that really our biggest problem today? I don't think so.
Lynn is in West Virginia, first-time caller. Hi, Lynn. Welcome to the program.
Hi, George. How are you doing?
Good, Lynn.
Hey, I was just wondering, how do we stop this madness of them draining the American people? And I'm just wondering, I'm at 56 years old. Is there going to be any Social Security for me? Because that's the only thing I really got is a worker.
Well, that's a good question. George, he's 56, so he's eligible in 9 or 10 years. Is he going to get it?
He may, but at some point we will likely see dramatic changes to Social Security. The reason is we have not enough young people coming into the workforce. Again, this is one of the reasons that immigration, a lot of immigration, makes sense, because it's a way to get people in and paying into Social Security and so forth who won't initially be taking it for a while. The model that you can look at, and it's not a very encouraging one, unfortunately, is go back and look at how the government pension programs have unwound and are unwinding in places like Greece and in the former Soviet Union, all the pain and suffering that Russia went through. At some point, there just isn't enough money, so people have their benefits cut. And at that point, as a senior citizen, you better plan on having a paid-for place to live and a garden so you can supplement your food and maintain your health above all, because if you don't, you're not going to be around very long.
No, you're not. You're not. Are you, in spite of everything that's been going on over the last few years, are you pretty bullish about things?
I am, because America has, in the past, when times have gotten very tough, we have pulled together as a people. I've read, literally dozens upon dozens of books about the Great Depression, everything from Ben Bernanke's very good economics book on it, to people like Richard T. Ely, years back in 1933, was writing about hard times, the way in, the way out. Fundamentally, what happens, George, is whenever you have a massive structural production change. Back then it was automobiles and internal combustion engines and roads and highways, and this time it's the information infrastructure, the electronic roads and highways, if you will. Whenever you have those major displacements come along, there's a boom and then it's followed by a bust. We're kind of working through the bust even now. The problem is we have all of our human resources being squandered on things like social media. And so we need to figure out, what is it we can do? Bullishly, I would be investing in virtual reality companies. I don't know of any real pure plays in that, but there are companies that are going down that path. We are eventually migrating out of the world of things into the world of thoughts, into the world of quality humans. But it's a very bumpy road getting there. And in the meantime, we have to make sure that the physical reality we're in today is not hijacked by people who are only interested in feathering their own nest.
Let's go to Jesse in Vancouver, Canada, International Line. Hello, Jesse. You're up with us.
Thank you very much, George. I have two questions. Should I ask both at the same time?
Let's go one at a time.
Sure. The first one has to do with U.S. Central Bank not publishing the M3 figures. They haven't done that now almost for 10 years, which means all the dollars which are hidden in sovereign wealth funds, hedge funds, hedge instruments, they are all unknown to public. Why are they hiding that information? Because that means we don't know how much danger the dollar is in once Saudi Arabia, for example, starts dumping the sovereign wealth fund after the recent legislation which has been passed by the Senate. And other dangers, the whim of the hedge fund holders. And the sole reason is the M3 figure, which is published by all other central banks, is not being published by the U.S. Central Bank. Can you justify that?
I can't justify it. I can say that the United States Fed went under Greenspan into hiding some of its monetary measures. Specifically, we used to have a figure called M3, which was a broader aggregate than M1, which is cash, M2, which is cash equivalents, time deposits, and so forth. Another useful number to look at is MZM, which is money zero maturity. There is a website called Now and Futures that my friend Trader Bart runs, and he has actually done a reconstruction of M3, and it's called M3B, and it's good to several sigma places, put it that way. It's a very good estimate. But the further complexity for the U.S. government, for the U.S. Fed, I'm sorry, is that we took in a tremendous amount of bags of collateralized obligations as part of the workout of 2009. Even though this is carried on the Fed's books, last time I looked, it was, I want to say, $4 trillion that the Fed was holding as security. I'm not sure we have ever seen an honest mark-to-market of those to account for things like defaults and payoffs and so forth. So those are some, again, goes to what you're saying. Yes, there are a lot of hidden variables, and the markets make what they hope are intelligent choices on that. But I think the bigger problem is the structural what's ahead for us, regardless of how much we have or don't have, what will be the reaction when too big to fail from Europe starts looking for American money to bail it out.
And Jesse, you had a quick second question.
Yeah,
go ahead.
The question has to do with the fact that central bank uses the interest rate to control the money supply. China is using the reserve ratio to control the money supply. Europe is also following the same policy as the United States. And that puts the U.S. economy in great danger, because when they try increasing the interest rate to control the inflation, they'll just increase the cash requirement to fund the bonds on the government to such an extent that the U.S. government will go broke. Do you have any explanation for why they don't use the reserve ratio to control the money supply instead of interest rates? Because if they increase the interest rates, the industries cannot sustain that expense. They go broke. The production goes overseas. Why are they doing that?
Simply put, the Fed is operating under the dual mandate. And the dual mandate says that they will go for monetary stability and maximum growth. It does not speak to the important issue, and that's where the reserve ratios come in, the important underlying issue, which is maintaining the purchasing power of the dollar on a reliable basis. Is it a problem? Yes, because what ends up occurring is you will have one class of asset that will be appreciating at a high interest rate, and those assets appreciating at lower interest rates will, over time, develop unworkable spreads, and the system must collapse and rebuild itself in order to recover from those economic sins. Unfortunately, at some point, and I expect 2017, 2018, is when we'll come to that come-to-Jesus moment, if you will, for the markets.
You know, George, looking back at this Egyptian plane, and we're all going to make this assumption that a bomb may have taken it down. That seems to be the likely possibility. What do these people get out of this? I mean, there's no mission. There's nothing. What do they get out of this?
If you look at militant Islam, you will find that for some reason, loud noises have been very appealing. We saw that first, I think, in Iraq. There were a lot of bombings. I think it was the Ba'ath Party back when. But there's some attraction to explosives. They do a lot of damage. They are easily done by a small, dedicated cadre. They're easy to maneuver. They're easy to transport. They do a lot of damage. They make a lot of headlines. They cost a lot of money. You know, the death of an airline passenger is $1 million apiece. So, you know, you throw in the cost of the airport.
Oh, they're going to kill Egypt's tourism. They're going to kill
it. They already have. They already have. No one in their right mind under today's global conditions would go to Egypt.
I've got a guest who goes there on a regular basis, and I keep asking him, why are you doing this? But, you know, he claims once inside it's safe, but getting there is the problem.
Yeah. My wife and I were looking at going to Europe, and, you know, things happen like France, the shootings in France. What's achieved by that? And the answer is it slows the economy. It takes away freedom to travel. It takes away the glow of democracy.
Well, I got to tell you, this is going to explode in more ways than one, because someone like a Donald Trump will nuke them if he has to.
I'm not sure he would go that far, but
that's my opinion.
And I'm not saying necessarily that an eye for an eye or a bunch of eyes for an eye is not a good foreign policy.
George, thanks for being on the program. You take care. Keep in touch with us. And what's your next project?
My next project is eye surgery.
Oh, really? Cataracts again?
I had cataracts taken out in 79. Lenses have become displaced, so I've had one taken out, and I'll have an installation surgery in about 2 weeks. So it's been really interesting to live in the blind world for the past month.
Do stem cells and grow it back.
Yeah,
oh, that's happening.
The human trials, I don't think, have been approved yet.
Not yet. George, thanks for being on the program. Up next, we're going to talk about possessed children. It's happening in Peru. Where else is it happening? David Weatherly joins us on Coast to Coast AM.